This paid program may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. In an age when information has become a significant strategic asset, the U.S. Census Bureau produces some of the most highly sought-after data in the nation. The rapid expansion of web-based solutions, technological advances, online culture, and the increasing expectation of citizens has required data-rich agencies, such as the Census Bureau, to use more innovative ways to collect and, just as importantly, disseminate products. Today's amazing mix of cloud computing, ever smarter mobile devices, and collaboration tools is changing the consumer landscape and bleeding into government as an opportunity and a challenge. To seize the opportunities and meet the challenges involves leveraging innovation and advances in technology. What is the U.S. Census Bureau's technology innovation strategy? How is Census using new technologies to improve services and products? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Avi Bender, Chief Technology Officer at the U.S. Census Bureau. Avi, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Paul Kayada. Paul, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here.
Avi, I'd like to kick off our conversation with some context. Would you provide us with a brief overview of the history and mission of the U.S. Census Bureau?
The Census Bureau has a very long history. It serves as a leading source of quality data about the nation's people and economy. The Bureau is the largest statistical agency in the government. You know, not a day goes by that you don't hear something being quoted from the Census Bureau on the news. I would say that we honor the privacy, protect the confidentiality of the data that we collect, and we share our expertise globally. The Census, just a little bit of a history. The Census was created in 1790 in that actually it was when the first census was taken, and then 10 years thereafter. The Census Act of 1840 established a centralized office, but it wasn't until 1902 that a census office was actually created within the Department of Interior. But in 1903, it moved to the Department of Commerce and has been there ever since. By constitutional law, we're required to conduct a decennial survey every 10 years, covering all 50 states, the District of Columbia, the island areas. And then the federal government uses this information to apportion the seats in the U.S. House of Representatives. Census data is also used to draw congressional and state legislative districts. We also conduct economic census. We're in the midst of one right now. The economic census measures the nation's economy every 5 years, providing vital statistics for virtually every industry and geography in our country. We do the census of government. This is a census that's taken every 5 years. It provides comprehensive data about nearly 90,000 state and local governments in the nation. One particular survey that goes on actually every month is an adjunct to the decennial. It's called the American Community Survey. Very important survey. It's part of the decennial. It's an ongoing survey. It happens every month and collects information about the population, what it looks like, and how it lives. And actually, very recently, we released the American Community Survey 5-year estimates, which cover the 2007 to 2011 data. These annual 5-year estimates represent a major statistical innovation in that they provide detailed economic, social, demographic, and housing information for over 700 1,000 communities. Information that prior to the ACS was available only once in a decade. So it's really important to make this information current. You hear so much about big data. This is about as big data as you can get. The ACS five-year statistics contain almost 11 billion estimates. And they deliver on the big data promise. They provide local communities with the information they need to make informed decisions. I would add that we conduct many other surveys for the United States, economic surveys, demographic surveys. Some of the demographic surveys are actually what we call reimbursable surveys that we do on behalf of other agencies, again, collecting very critical information. We're in the survey business. We're known globally for that capability, and we share this expertise with our clients.
Well, I'd like to talk about your expertise, and more particularly, what was the genesis around creating the CTO position within Census, and how is your area organized?
The CTO's office, I'm actually the first CTO for the U.S. Census Bureau. The office was created about 2.5 years ago to establish a business-driven enterprise architecture and infrastructure to support the next decennial in 2020, as well as support our economic, demographic, and research and methodology directorates. So now when I say business-driven, I'm referring to what I would call an actionable EA, enterprise architecture, to promote operational efficiencies, cost savings, and improve our agility to conduct survey operations. Like all federal agencies, we're required to deliver our services in a way that's faster, better, and cheaper. So I work very closely with our CIO to ensure that we build a high-performance computing environment, high-performance organization to support the mission of the Bureau.
So now that we've had a good sense for the Census Bureau and also your role, perhaps you could get into a little bit more detail about your specific responsibilities as the CTO. And maybe if you could explain to the audience how it complements the role of the Chief Information Officer.
As a CTO, my primary responsibility is to modernize our mission and enabling services that support the survey lifecycle. I deliver these capabilities through the architecture, the governance process, and our innovation program. For example, in the past 2.5 years, I've led several initiatives that included a five-year technology roadmap, the enterprise selection and deployment of SharePoint for knowledge management and collaboration throughout the Bureau, the creation of an innovative data management system to manage our high-value data files. I initiated an important segment architecture for data collection, which is part of an effort called adaptive design. I've created an innovation program in a lab with support from an extended team. And more recently, I've assumed the lead role implementing the federal digital strategy. We're also creating a SOA roadmap and establishing the development environment for how we build modular services and capabilities to support future survey operations. In terms of the way I'm kind of structured, I have a small team of six enterprise architects and solution architects, and we are focused on establishing a meaningful and business-driven EA program, a governance process to transform the organization through the EA, and an innovation program that is forward-leaning and forward-thinking. Now, six people cannot modernize the Census Bureau, so we use a leverage business model here of having a really what I would call an A team of skilled professionals who have come to us from industry, both within the private sector and the federal government. And these individuals work with an extended team throughout the Bureau to really make this happen. I'd like to share with you a tagline, because what I do sometimes is difficult to explain. So the tagline that I use, and it's been effective, is we try to simplify through standards and innovate through shared services. And this tagline really encapsulates the desired outcome of what we do and, in a way, how we do it.
Maybe you could describe the difference between the chief technologist and the chief information officer. How do these two roles complement each other?
Well, Brian McGrath, who's the CIO, and I work very closely together. It's basically a marriage. The CIO's role is shaped by Klinger-Cohen and OMB directives. And when you look at what the CIO does in aggregate, it's very much an operational-focused job. It's intended to reduce risk, cost, and drive operational efficiencies. My role is to move us forward beyond our comfort zone and to become the trusted advisor of both the CIO and our customers. I work very closely with our CIO, Brian, to establish the long-term vision And then to ensure that that vision actually becomes a reality, and in terms of the how, it's really through the enterprise architecture, the governance process, and the innovation program that we've put in place, and also by hiring the right types of skills and leveraging the talent that we have, you know, within the organization. My title is CTO. I do not consider myself, per se, a hardcore technologist by training. I'd like to think of myself more as an organizational change agent, and by applying a series of skills that I think CTOs should have.
With such a robust portfolio, I'd like to understand some of the challenges you face. Could you identify some of those challenges?
Well, Michael, my top three challenges when I think about this are, first, keeping up with the customer demands for the latest and greatest technologies, tremendous possibilities as this industry is transforming so rapidly in front of us, creating and enforcing an enterprise architecture, and then at the same time innovating. And somehow these three together don't seem to make sense, but actually they're related. Let me state right up front that it's challenging to do all of that when you come into an organization as an outsider. But my prior experience at the Internal Revenue Service and prior consulting experience with a global consulting organization, I think, helped me personally. The approach to addressing these challenges is through building trust. It's really important. It's all about trust. But trust has to be earned, and it has to be based on delivering results. So I believe that the CIO and I have, over the past 3 years, earned the trust of our customers, and we've done that through collaboration. Whether it's creating the EA or the innovation lab or enforcing standards, it's all being done through a teaming effort across the bureau. For example, to create an effective EA, I established a standards working group and an architecture review board. The members of these groups are from across the Census Bureau. It's not just IT people. And they now have a voice in the enterprise, a voice in making decisions about setting standards. So it's not us operating from an ivory tower, but it's really engaging individuals across the business to make sure that their views are heard and basically implemented. The Center for Applied Technology was built to address the customer demands for evaluating all these new technologies. So here we took an empty space that was left over from the last decennial and converted that into a world-class facility that allows individuals to really come together and collaborate and innovate together. So these challenges, to summarize, have been dealt with by building trust.
Now perhaps you could tell us a little bit about yourself. Could you describe your career path for our listeners? How did you begin your career, and what brought you to your current leadership role?
Well, Paul, I never aspired to be a CIO, and I never aspired to be a CTO. That was not in my game plan. Sometimes things just happen. I have a master's in marine science and a master's in information systems. My early work in the 1980s was actually in the environmental sciences. And then after doing a stint in consulting, I joined the government in 1984, working for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission as a program manager in IT. I thought I was entering a typical government job at the time that would just be doing stuff as a program manager. But as it turned out, I did some very innovative work, and it was the government that actually launched my career. And specifically, the innovation that I was involved with was putting in place what at the time were some of the first systems in the world for full-text search and image retrieval and document management. And I spent 6 years with the NRC. It led to the development of a licensing support system to manage the high-level waste program. I then left the government, even though I had a very nice position there. I left the government because I had this continued passion and desire to do more in this whole emerging area of digital technologies. And this goes back now to the early 1990s. I then did a startup for a company at that time called GTE, which has become Verizon, under their venture capital umbrella, and helped create some of the early systems in both video conferencing, document management, and imaging. Suddenly, I found a passion, a focus, and what at the time was a worldwide expertise. So I was recruited by Pricewaterhouse to help manage their enterprise content management and media entertainment business. I spent about 2+ years in Hollywood and some of the major studios helping organizations manage content. That expertise was recognized, and I was recruited as an executive within IBM to help run their media entertainment consulting business for several years. and I decided to move on and actually start another company. And that company had to do with the creation of middleware technologies for service-oriented architecture to specifically address issues within the content industry and the media entertainment industry. I did some consulting. I worked for such organizations as Qualcomm as consultant to put together innovation strategies. And then an interesting opportunity came forth with the Internal Revenue Service. This was an opportunity to head up their architecture as a director for enterprise architecture. This was a four-year termed appointment, which I accepted. When my term was up, the opportunity came up with the U.S. Census Bureau. I noticed that they never had a CTO. I could start with a blank sheet of paper and work closely with our CIO to really shape what this role should be with a view toward modernization. So I was really honored and pleased to be able to obtain this position.
What is the Census Bureau's technology innovation strategy? We will ask Avi Bender, Chief Technology Officer at the U.S. Census Bureau, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. What is NIH doing to advance basic and biomedical research? What is being done to ensure the safety and soundness of the country's credit union system? How can government better manage risk, reduce waste, and use resources more wisely? What are the benefits of e-diplomacy? How are agencies adopting innovative new technologies and open government? And what are some of the key issues for governing in the next 4 years? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. You can order or download a free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Avi Bender, Chief Technology Officer at the U.S. Census Bureau. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Paul Kayada. So, Avi, Census relies on information and technology to carry out its mission, and I'd like to explore a little bit about Census's technology and innovation strategy. Would you tell us a little bit more about it, how it relates to the Bureau's overarching IT strategy, and more importantly, how is the Bureau using 21st century technology to meet its centuries-old mission?
Our mission may be centuries old, but I would assure you that as we speak, we're very much using 21st century technology. I think the challenge that's really facing us is how to leverage and scale our business to maximize the use of these technologies. I think that's really very important. An increasing number of our surveys are being conducted through the Internet. We have a significant modernization program using VDI, virtual desktop capabilities, to support both headquarters and the field, which just recently went through a consolidation. We're actively assessing the feasibility of BYOD, bring your own device, and we're continuing to transform the public-facing Internet to deliver data, APIs, and, as you know, even mobile computing apps. This is going to be an evolutionary process, and we're making significant progress, even with these very difficult budgetary constraints. I would say that we're the quintessential big data organization. We continue to look for ways to deliver this data to the public to make it very useful. And if you go to our website and you listen to some of the recent press releases, we're continuing to meet that demand for data consumptions to the external world on all types of different devices. All of this is very much in line with both the overall mission of the U.S. Census Bureau and to the business missions of the surveys we conduct. It's very much in sync with both our IT strategy, and I think later we may be discussing both the digital strategy of government. We're very much in sync with that, simply trying to institutionalize what is common sense, to be honest with you.
So as a visionary, and as you described it, a change agent within the Bureau, would you elaborate on your efforts to foster an enterprise view that supports a one connected enterprise and how you may have influenced the movement toward actionable, strategically focused enterprise? For example, how does moving toward a service-oriented architecture that you mentioned earlier and a flexible architecture approach move toward those efforts?
Well, Paul, fostering that enterprise view is not so difficult as it may seem. And I sense that many of my colleagues at the Census Bureau share this view. I think the challenge that we face right now is more of the how. I mean, how can we get to that end game of the one connected enterprise when the organization, as you may know, is decentralized by virtue of the mission and the surveys that we conduct. But I think there's a recognition that the survey life cycle, from survey design to data collection, processing, and data dissemination, is very similar across our various business units. So whether you're conducting a demographic survey, economic survey, or a decennial survey, there are great similarities. So the SOA approach, the service-oriented architecture approach, provides the ability of building survey capabilities that are decoupled from the devices and operating systems and are very much web-centric. And that's going to give us incredible flexibility to either build our own capabilities and services or, in fact, leverage external cloud resources in terms of scaling the business. SOA, together with our cloud strategy, will really help us transform us to that end state. And remember that the end game here, a very important end game in delivering our service, is to do it faster, better, and cheaper. We don't want to reinvent the wheel. It's important for us to be modular, flexible, and leverage expertise from industry. SOA forces us to think about capabilities, modularity, open standards, being flexible, and getting away from many of these point-to-point integrated solutions, which, of course, are very difficult to maintain.
Enterprise governance is critical to the success of the Bureau. I'd like to explore your efforts to enhance the Bureau's technology governance process. Could you elaborate on the efforts that the areas and the benefits realized in pursuit of those activities? And how does governance enable your organization to optimize resources across the enterprise?
Governance clearly helps us optimize resources, but believe it or not, governance is also key to innovation, even though the word sounds a bit constraining. You need to have technical, financial, and security guardrails, and governance provides that. Given the nature of the business that we're in and the sensitivity of the data, the oath that we each as individuals take to protect this data, we need to innovate. We need to do this in a secure way, and governance provides those guardrails. That's why, as part of our EA program, I established a standards working group and the architecture review board. And these are benefits that we can make smarter decisions about acquiring products, negotiating licensing deals, and eliminating waste. Again, including as many people from the Census Bureau in the governance so they have a stake and skin in the game. Governance beyond our various governance bodies also extends to our system development lifecycle process, which will provide the structure and the discipline to modernize our IT infrastructure and our applications. As you know, at each stage of the SDLC gate reviews, we can assess those risks, both technical, financial, and security. Being able to do that throughout the lifecycle of a project, we can ensure that our resources are being applied correctly to do the right thing. I'm expecting that the digital strategy and some of the moves I'm seeing from the White House will continue to push federal agencies toward instantiating this whole digital strategy approach and open data standards through an SDLC process to manage the complete information lifecycle within the Bureau.
Avi, before we get into external customers, I'd like to focus a little bit on your internal customers, and that's the workforce that meets the mission of Census. And every 10 years, Census ramps up its workforce to over 500,000 people. In that brief period, the Census Bureau has what is in essence the largest mobile workforce. What are you doing to change the way it does business, and how does that relate to your mobility strategy?
We have to support 12,000 people in the field as it is today. And as you know, when we eventually get to this 2020 census, that workforce is going to exceed over 500,000. We need to have a capability to provide the tools for the people in the field. Most likely, these will be mobile devices. And these devices need to be smartphone-like capabilities that will enable a mashup of both access to geographic information, case information. So these devices must have multiple capabilities. How we deploy these devices today for 2020 has yet to be determined. For the status quo, we are using traditional encrypted laptops. As we look towards 2020, we are going to need to very carefully evaluate the potential use of VDI technologies, Security is a major concern. We'd like to standardize the experience of the end users, because these are individuals that comes from all walks of life, all different levels of education, and we'd like to be able to achieve standardization, and to the extent we can deploy it through our VDI capabilities, we can improve our security as well. We're thinking through this right now. The 2020 is still a bit away, but we're conducting research in that area.
So, Avi, as part of Census's mission, it returns its data to the people. To that end, it has launched its first app, America's Economy. Would you tell us more about its creation, and what are the benefits of this app?
Sure, Michael. The American Economy app was launched in August of 2012 and highlighted a recent White House event that I attended. It provides updated statistics on the U.S. economy, including monthly economic indicators and economic trends. The app consolidates kind of a mashup data from the Census Bureau, the Bureau of Economic Analysis, the Bureau of Labor Statistics. The app allows access in real time to 16 economic indicators. It's a wonderful example of taking big data and making it consumable for the public. There are tremendous benefits from these apps, and as they aggregate this information, discrete data from several agencies to create a more meaningful perspective about our economy and trends. And we're excited about this because this approach puts the data in the hands of consumers, local communities, people who really need this information without having any intermediaries. It was done through a cross-bureau team of technical people, business people, the people from the Economic Directorate, and together we came up with this app, and we've also used some contractor support to help us out.
What about the Census Bureau's first ever public application programming interface, or API? How does the new API let developers customize Census Bureau statistics into the web or mobile apps, and what other apps may be on the horizon?
We actually do have several apps on the horizon, and I'll just use it as a teaser for the time being that's coming out. But this question you asked me, Paul, about the APIs is really very important because it addresses the federal digital strategy and our commitment to the public. We will periodically create apps, and we have two apps on the constructions. But I'm more excited about what we learned recently from a commerce-sponsored Challenge.gov contest that resulted in three winning applications that you can check on their website at the SBA that make use of census data mapping and data from other agencies. These apps were enabled by both our data and the APIs. To encourage innovative uses of census data and to provide easy access, we have to create these APIs. Ideally, we would like to be in a future situation where we have a single API to all of our data. For the time being, we are releasing data incrementally. The first API was in the summer of 2012. This developer API-friendly API was allowing users to access the 2010 census summary files and the 2010 American Community Survey five-year data that I mentioned earlier. Using this API, the users can have access to census data such as population measures, poverty and household income, and by various geographic boundaries. I think it's important for us to publish these APIs because the intent here is to have the public, small businesses, large businesses, the communities innovate with our data. Although it's nice for us to, how can I say it, provide some starter apps, we're not in the mobile app business per se. We are really in the business of releasing our data and creating an underlying ecosystem or platform to enable others to innovate with our data. We are providing examples of what can be done, but we're looking forward to helping accelerate the process by which others use our data. The API is a mechanism by which we can make that happen.
Avi, you've mentioned a couple of times during our conversation the administration's digital government strategy. Would you tell us a little bit more about that? I know you've been recognized and Census has been recognized as a promoter of this. What is the strategy and how have you used it to better serve citizens?
So Brian McGrath, our CIO, has asked me to take a leading role for the Bureau to achieve that approach. The federal digital strategy is about unlocking the power of government data and spurring innovation. I know Todd Park and Stephen Rokel at the administration do a lot of talks about that. It's actually a very good document. The strategy applies to the Census Bureau because we're a big data provider. And our mission is to conduct surveys and publish the data by use for the, by the public. The digital strategy has some really good fundamental principles and tenets about making open data, about instantiating data throughout the open data standards throughout the information lifecycle, about making this information very much customer-centric. These are very good principles by which to build systems. I'm leveraging the strategy not so much as a a compliance document. You know, sometimes information comes out of OMB, and typically folks look at that and say, okay, here's what we got to do by this schedule, check, 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 it's done. I think the basic principles and tenets and the strategy are very important and are good guidance about how to build systems as well. Now, the strategy was very much mobile dissemination-centric. I think it is being expanded to really look at the back-end systems as well. Before you can get to dissemination, before you can publish APIs, you really got to have your act together on your infrastructure, on your plumbing, the whole data collection process. So we intend to really leverage this strategy to think through about how we collect, how we process, how we disseminate information, and to apply the basic principles of the strategy. And as I mentioned earlier, also to actually make something happen by using a service-oriented architecture.
How is Census identifying new technologies and promoting innovation? We will ask Avi Bender, Chief Technology Officer at the U.S. Census Bureau, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. What is NIH doing to advance basic and biomedical research? How can government better manage risk, reduce waste, and use resources more effectively? What are the benefits of e-diplomacy? How are agencies adopting innovative technologies in open government? And what are some of the key issues for governing in the next 4 years? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. This edition highlights the latest trends and best practices for improving government effectiveness by introducing you to government executives, public management practitioners, leading academics, and the differing ways they tackle many of the pressing public management issues facing us today. Hear from NIH Director Dr. Francis Collins, OMB's Danny Warfel, NCUA Chair Debbie Matz, VA's Dr. Peter Levin, and Rich Boley from the State Department. All of this and much more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Order or download your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Avi Bender, Chief Technology Officer at the U.S. Census Bureau. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Paul Kayada. Avi, what are some of the major challenges and advantages to managing the move to a mobile work environment? How important is it to have the right combination of devices and policies to meet agency needs against the backdrop of evolving technology?
I'll probably answer your question in a non-technical way first. Mobile computing is here. It's a reality. We use it in work every single day. It's really about the opportunity to view mobile computing as a platform for change. We're in the early stages today of VDI. We've got about 2,500 people on it. And so far, it has proven to be a tremendous success on many levels, many thanks to our acting director and to Brian McGrath for pushing this forward. So VDI is an important capability that then can use mobile computing to get access to this information. We don't want to issue laptops going forward, given the, some of the security issues associated with that. With VDI, you can have access to data anytime, anywhere, and from any device without having sensitive data on that device at rest. Another advantage of meeting the demands of a mobile worker is that it begins to shine a light on legacy applications that may not be ready to be virtualized, right? So you can't get access to information anywhere, anytime if you have certain issues in terms of the architecture of applications that just can't be virtualized. That shines a light on those apps, and we need to modernize them and bring them up to speed. It refers back to my point about creating this enabling platform and how mobile computing forces you to really innovate. In terms of the actual mobile devices, we're not married to any one single device. Today we use blackberries. Tomorrow we may use something else. We take guidance from the U.S. Department of Commerce. Their CIO has issued guidance with respect to mobile device management. We follow that guidance. We adopt those as standards, and that helps influence our approach and shape. What we really want to have these devices be more of a commodity, if you will, and merely a component, a capability of how you get access to information. We spend a lot of time thinking about devices and all the great possibilities, but I would ask you to think about how organizations such as the UPSs of the world and the FedExes of the world, how they use devices. The device is merely an extension of a business process. It's a means to an end of achieving optimal efficiencies, cost savings, and in their case, it's a competitive advantage. In our case, it's just being able to do our job faster, better, cheaper.
I'd like to switch gears and discuss the Bureau's shared services strategy. What are you doing in the area of shared services? And can you tell us about the strategy and how it may, how the effort involves leveraging cloud solutions?
Okay. First, as a piece of information, there's a really good companion document to the Federal Digital Strategy, which is called the Federal Shared Services Strategy. Both of these documents came out in May of 2012. Shared services plays a very important role in our strategy as it relates to the survey lifecycle. We have three major business units: economic, demographic, the 2020 directorate, as well as research and methodology. But we're a decentralized organization, just by the way we do our surveys. But if you look at the underlying infrastructure requirements and even the business processes, they are, in fact, very similar. We have four primary modes of gathering data that include the internet, telephone, personal interviews with a device, and paper. So our strategy is to reduce the number of duplicative systems for each mode and create a common mixed mode platform to service all of these surveys. These modular capabilities, for example, for workload management, for case management, for operational control in the field, for human resources, will be delivered as integrated services through a private cloud using the SOA approach. I should also mention, from a mission enabling type service, we also use shared services. To the extent that we can use a core competency of another agency as a shared service, it makes a lot of sense. So we recently adopted something called HR Connect. It's a treasury-based shared service. We're using WebTA from another agency for timekeeping. These are examples of how we are, I would say, shutting down some of our own systems, leveraging shared services, and really trying to focus on the core capabilities of what it is that we have. Interestingly enough, the U.S. Census Bureau is very much a large shared services organization. I mentioned before that we do reimbursable surveys in the demographic side. For example, we're going to be doing a survey for HUD, the American Housing Survey, very soon. These are examples of reimbursable surveys, and we get paid a fee to conduct these surveys for other agencies who need the data, but the survey business is not their core competency, and they look to us to leverage our expertise in getting them the data that they need. I think overall for the government, it's a very effective approach to, you know, leverage each other's shared services.
So given the volume of data the Bureau collects and disseminates, it requires serious records management program and a robust enterprise content management strategy. Would you tell us more about the efforts to enhance your records management program, and what are you doing to strengthen enterprise content management function?
I go back in this industry long enough to have actually seen the evolution of the marketing term enterprise content management. So it means different things to different people. Let me just state up front that in my view, enterprise content management is an integrated business and technology strategy for the acquisition, management, and dissemination of all content in all its shapes and forms. I'll give you two specific examples of how we're addressing records management within the construct of the simplification through standards and innovation through shared services. Not too long ago, we had a need for collaboration, knowledge management, wikis, and blogs. Rather than acquiring discrete solutions, we made a decision to acquire SharePoint as an enterprise standard and to use it as an enabling platform for managing our documents and records. This is also now being done in conjunction with a data management system that was then built using the SharePoint platform in conjunction with the Oracle database, which is one of our standards. Together, these capabilities provide a very important technical framework for managing our data. In addition to that, much of our data exists today within Notes, our email system. But all of that technically is insufficient. All of that needs to really be guided by policies and procedures. As you know, if we ever get to a discovery situation and legal issues, it really goes all the way back to the how you've structured your policies and procedures. And for that, we have other groups within the Bureau in terms of privacy that deal and records management to deal with those specific issues. It's a long process to getting this done. I really think that a key accelerator will be our move to the cloud, and that will allow us to finally have many of the files available in the server within the cloud as opposed to individual files on people's desktops. It's a multi-pronged program. We're moving in this direction. It's going to be an evolutionary process.
Would you tell us a little bit about the Center for Applied Technology? What promoted its creation, and what, to the extent, does it operate as a focal point for bringing entrepreneurial-minded staff, emerging technologies, and pressing business functions facing the Census Bureau?
Well, Paul, this is probably the favorite part of my job. That's the fun part of my job. We took a large empty space that was left over from the last decennial that was frankly used as a storage area, and we have converted that into a world-class innovation center that has become an oasis for innovation. I mean, I knew that we had many talented staff who wanted to try out new technologies. And a personal note, having spent a good portion of my career in private industry as an entrepreneur in building businesses and sales and in marketing and seeing how small companies work, I really wanted to create a fun, fast-paced, collaborative environment where people can come in, leave their cubicles, and do great things together. And I underline the word together. I've just been blown away by the impact and the results of this facility. It has led to the creation of both some of the apps. We're doing work in data analytics and visualization. We're exploring new ways for doing business process modeling and optimizing the way we conduct our surveys. We have work ongoing with seven federal agencies who have come to meet with us. We have external and international delegation who are coming to learn about what we're doing. We have 70 projects on their way. 20 have resulted in some very specific. After they have been incubated, they have come out and are now being operationalized, such as SharePoint, the document systems, the data management systems that I mentioned to you. We're continuing to look at social media and the potential capabilities that that has. Of course, mobile computing is a big part of what's going on in the lab. We recently had a codathon, a really interesting approach of very quickly developing some tools and capabilities and tapping into the staff that we have. The Center for Applied Technology, the CAT, is both a physical space and it is a virtual space. But the intent here is to just get people out of their cubicles, get them together, and have fun. It's been a wonderful success. We see some tremendous opportunities for even scaling it in other ways.
What are you doing to cultivate a risk-tolerant environment that fosters innovation in your bureau as respects technology advancement?
We have very innovative employees. This is not restricted to IT people. We have really smart people throughout the headquarters and in the field. And we need to provide them with an opportunity to actually try things and fail fast, in a fast environment. And it's really better to take risk than no risk than having costly mistakes down the road. So I think people need to have an environment where they can take a risk, they can fail fast, but we need to do that in a safe zone. We can't have people taking risk within an operational environment. So the CAT, the Center for Applied Technology, has created this safe zone for people to take the risk. That also comes from leadership. I think leadership has to encourage us to be more of risk takers. We have to be very much entrepreneur-minded, And frankly, we have a number of pockets within the Census Bureau that have done some pretty amazing things with systems already, such as our internet data collection capabilities, our ability to capture paper documents, the work that you're seeing in terms of the web transformation and social media. So we need to give people the space in which to operate so that they can take the risk. And I think that's very important. And so far, it seems to be working. We've had a long tradition in doing this, but I would say that Dr. Groves, the past director, together with Tom Messenburg, have really fostered this culture of collaboration and trying things out.
Before we close this segment, I wanted to understand a little bit about agile development. And could you tell us what it is and what are some of the benefits of pursuing such an approach? And has it been done in the Bureau before?
Yes, it is being done in the Bureau as we speak. Agile development is a highly collaborative and iterative process by which you build a system in close coordination with a customer. It's somewhat different from kind of a traditional waterfall approach where you go through a series of requirements development, and then at some point down the road, you actually begin to show the customer something, and then you may find out that it's not actually what they expected. So the agile approach engages with the customer as early as possible. It reduces our time to market. It improves overall customer satisfaction since they've become active participants, and expectations are controlled in a much better way. We've employed this approach successfully with the recent rollout of our data management system, with the rollout of the SharePoint capabilities, as well as other smaller systems throughout the Bureau. Agile should not imply quick and dirty. Agile still has to follow a system development life cycle. I mentioned earlier that we do need to have these risk, financial, technical guardrails supported by the EA. So Agile will still follow that process. But it's really the how. It's the how we engage with the customer that is very much important. You know, frankly, if you look at the way capabilities are being developed today on the web and how some of the major organizations got their start, they didn't follow a very long waterfall process. They just developed quickly. They put stuff out there. Maybe they failed. They made corrections, and then they scaled their business. We simply have to adopt this same approach.
What does the future hold for technology innovation at the U.S. Census Bureau? We will ask its Chief Technology Officer, Avi Bender, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour. What is NIH doing to advance basic and biomedical research? How can government better manage risk, reduce waste, and use resources more effectively? What are the benefits of e-diplomacy? How are agencies adopting innovative technologies in open government? And what are some of the key issues for governing in the next 4 years? Pick up the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine and find out. This edition highlights the latest trends and best practices for improving government effectiveness by introducing you to government executives, public management practitioners, leading academics, and the differing ways they tackle many of the pressing public management issues facing us today. Hear from NIH Director Dr. Francis Collins, OMB's Danny Warfel, NCUA Chair Debbie Matz, VA's Dr. Peter Levin, and Rich Boley from the State Department. All of this and much more in the latest edition of the Business of Government magazine. Order or download your free copy at businessofgovernment.org. Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Avi Bender, Chief Technology Officer at the U.S. Census Bureau. Also joining our conversation from IBM is Paul Kayada. Avi, given the critical role information and technology plays in mission delivery, how has the role of chief technologist evolved into a trusted business advisor? And more particularly, what are some of the characteristics of an effective CTO in your mind?
I thought about that title, first of all. It probably should be chief transformation officer, maybe not so much chief technology officer, because I'm not in the business of selling technology. I am selling solutions to a business problem. And by taking this approach, it forces me, other CTOs, to really view the world from the lens of your customer. I think it's a very important perspective to have, a very important skill to have. You have to be a good listener, as techies or if we're branded as techies, we often seem to jump into new technologies and all the great things that are possible. You have to be a good listener. You have to understand the business problem at hand. You have to be able to reiterate to the customer what you believe the business problem is. You have to be a good communicator, and you also have to be a good team builder. I would recommend that CTOs, and I think CIOs as well, establish a core capability in strategic planning and consultative skills. For me personally, having a mix of both federal and non-federal experience was a big plus because I had to engage with customers at the CXO level, I mean at all levels of both government and also in the federal space. So I think it's really about also developing these soft skills, not just to be a techno whiz.
Avi, I have the pleasure of talking to all of my guests about the use of collaboration and partnerships among agencies and with the private sector to achieve mission results. How are you folks leveraging partnerships to improve operations and outcomes?
I mean, I think the one word that I've used a lot in our discussion today has been collaboration and teaming. We partner with federal agencies, academic institutions, and commercial entities as both consumers and producers of statistical services. We seek guidance from the National Academy of Science, from various scientific advisory board that specifically guide us on more statistical methodology type areas, as well as technology. On the IT side, we work with some of the large vendors such as Oracle, IBM, Red Hat, Cisco, Microsoft, and many other vendors. And we meet with them regularly to ensure, as part of our market research, to ensure that we're leveraging their innovation in the marketplace. This approach will help us deliver platform applications and software as services through our future cloud strategy. We realize we're a federal agency. We're not a system integrators. We would like to have private industry essentially compete among themselves, and we will then derive the benefit of what we're seeing in the marketplace and be the consumer of those types of services. As I mentioned, partnership with commercial entities, I have to be careful in that we have to follow the acquisition procurement laws. So while partnering in the commercial world is a little bit different, within the government, the partnerships is very much structured within the acquisition, the FAR process. But it's very important to have the continuous dialogue with some of the big vendors that we have adopted to help us move us forward to the cloud strategy. We do not have all the skills. Other federal agencies don't have all the skills. To the extent that we can establish this symbiotic relationship with private industry, the public is going to benefit, and frankly, it contributes to the growth of innovation in our economy.
Given the interaction that you just described with private industry and technology providers, what emerging technologies do you see out there that may hold promise for improving census and beyond that for the whole government?
You know, when I first started at the census, so 2.5 years ago, there was tremendous pressure, if you will, to use a lot of the new technologies, whether it was tablet devices, new smartphones, new tools. And we are moving in that direction, clearly. When I look at technology, the landscape, to be honest with you, I'm more fascinated by the emerging business models and ecosystems that are being created. Over time, we're going to find that technology will continue to evolve, but it's going to be commoditized. But what's going to stand out at the end is really the value that's created through the platform and the ecosystem. I mean, just look at Amazon, Priceline, eBay, Apple, Google, and many others. I mean, how can we in the federal government establish this type of a symbiotic relationship and ecosystem around data that we produce in order to deliver value to our citizens? I really think technology is important. We get enamored with technology. Clearly, technology and what we're seeing is going to fundamentally change our business. But ultimately, it's about the business model. It's about the ecosystem. We really need to think about this in a very different way, very open way, and think about creating new business models, just like the industry is doing. What can we learn from private industry?
So, Avi, what are some of the major opportunities and challenges your organization will encounter in the future? And how do you envision your office evolving to meet those challenges and seize those opportunities?